I watched that, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and like the reciprocal or like hermetic correspondence, where reality has this reflective and infinite aspect to it. And that's interesting, I thought, when I started looking into that stuff, how like shapes are kind of like, we're talking about truths. They're something that we as humans discover. Like, we don't like make up shapes, really. You know, like, shapes are pre-existing to reality. And then, you know, I was kind of tripping out how that ties into symbology too. Like, nature is symbols. It's built in symbols.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. So, okay, I had kind of some questions I wanted to go into, and some of this stuff is probably pretty basic, you know, and some of it will be more, you know, like, I'd like to learn some stuff too, as well as kind of just, you know, put some information out, you know, for those who are newer to the subject matter. So let's start. Can you explain to people the difference between symbolism and symbology? Symbology.
Sure. Yeah. Ology, it's just like the study of, right? Any word with ology, geology, right? The study of Earth or the planet, you know, meteorology, study of the atmosphere, the weather, right? So yeah. Symbology is just the study of symbols. And symbolism, you know, there's all different types of symbolism. But I did that one presentation where I broke down some of the most basic types that we see, like, in books and movies. And, like, one of the simplest types is metaphors, right? We got simile. Simile is kind of much the same as a metaphor, but, like, it generally is alike, things that are alike, you know? Where a metaphor is a little bit more of a just kind of deeper representation of a thing. And then you got, like, what else we talked about? I'm trying to remember the other types of symbolism that I was describing. But, you know, it's actually a really deep topic. The more I started looking into it, the deeper it goes. You know, it's profound. It's just crazy. But then what's interesting was, like, when I started looking at the parables, I realized, like, that's a type of symbolism, but you don't normally call, like, if somebody tells you a mystery or a riddle, they don't call it a parable. You know, they only called it a parable when Jesus told them. I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting. Mm. So that kind of made me wonder a little bit. But yeah, I think the more we just take apart all these words and look deeper into things, I learn a lot doing that process. I don't know how much, you know, for you as a listener, how it hits you, but I think it's an ongoing process of learning.
Yeah, it is. And see, a lot of this stuff and a lot of the, you know, what do you want to say, like, I don't know, like, metaphors and all that has been something that I've been somewhat resistant to picking up, because I am very left-brained, at least in language-wise, you know? I mean, I'm artistic in a lot of ways, but the way I kind of understand things and the way things work tends to be very left-brained oriented, so it's easy for me to think of things like that from a nuts and bolts perspective. But, you know, we have symbols everywhere, and you can look at anything, like you guys were talking about, you know. Oh, by the way, I was going to mention, you know, you put out basically a series of talks on symbolism and a couple presentations recently on your podcast, and I was probably going to link those in the description with this video, so I'd encourage everyone to check those out. It was some really interesting content.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so it's something that, you know, I do want to get more well-versed into and kind of train my brain to think on that in that way a little more.
Train the brain, reframe the mainframe. Yeah, like, I feel like our words, you know, like in the parable of the sower, they're our ability to convince. They're our ability to sell an idea, right? And that could be the difference between helping someone realize something that you know, really hope they realize, or them not realizing that thing. And so I always see it as, like, honing the craft, like sharpening the sword every time I have an opportunity to speak. with someone like you who's interested to learn, you know?
Yeah.
It's different when you're out in public and you can tell someone is kind of hardened in their ideas and they're not so much trying to learn as they are trying to argue, or like you mentioned before, on a Facebook argument or something, you know, like a lot of people aren't really trying to learn. They're just, it's an ego battle, you know?
Yeah.
Which, and exactly. This ties into self-defense too. So maybe we'll loop back to that. But the other thing that I wanted to say is, allegories, right? Like that was one of the terms I brought. An allegory is usually like a story from a book, or a story from the Bible, for instance, that we use to make a metaphor. And, you know, those words are kind of similar. They mean similar things, but they have a little bit of a slight difference. And so the better we, like, learn to, you know, jab and uppercut, the different moves we learn with our words, the better we can communicate and succinctly explain what it is we're trying to say. And sometimes that involves educating the people we're talking to too, because you have to bring people up to the level at which they can understand what we're talking about. It's why I'm constantly trying to redefine, like, what do I mean by evil? Because a lot of people think, oh, you can't end evil. That's impossible. Like, well, that's why I called it that. I want to redefine what we're talking about here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. 'Cause, you know, adding more to your tool set to be applied in the appropriate scenario, kind of like how Bruce Lee did. But yeah, that's a different topic that I'm also eager to get into. So where do you think occult symbolism originated? I know that, for instance, like Albert Church Ward, he said that Freemasonic symbolism has existed for at least 300,000 years, and a lot of people contest that or whatever. But I guess what is your take on all that?
My personal take is that as old as humanity is, there's been one form or another of symbolism going on, right? As far as how long did people test and change things until they started using symbology as a science to manipulate other people in a secretive manner. I think that's as old as our particular type of beings on this planet, because I tend to, if we're hypothesizing, I'm not talking, you know, this isn't quite science here. This is more of the theory world, which I like to do. It's fun. I'd like to hypothesize that, you know, the intervention theory makes a lot of sense to me. That here we are, these humans, that soft-skinned beings on this planet, unlike most of the beings, we really can't survive in the outdoors very well. We don't have sharp teeth. You know, it's like, where did we come from? You know, yeah. I tend to kind of think that, you know, there's so many different... I read a lot of the Sitchin books, and I don't completely buy into him either, but the Enki and the Enlil story, gone down all those paths, and... strangely enough, too, the Alien series with the especially the later stuff and the Prometheus, they all kind of point to the same, you know, this sort of weird AI or non-physical beings from somewhere else, somehow else, that messed with our DNA, you know, and it just explains a lot, you know, I hate to say it, really, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. And so, really, you know, does. I don't believe it, you know, I'm not into believing. But that's kind of the going theory that makes most sense to me in my conspiracy science process at this point.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
I'm kind of the same place you're at. You know, I don't know anything on it for sure, but I'm almost 100% convinced that there's more to it than, you know, the mainstream narrative, as with most things. I mean, and I think, you know, we need to question that as much as, you know, anything. So
if we were like a detective and we were looking at a crime or a mystery, right, like we would be entertaining theories in our mind. We'd be like, okay, the guy probably came in the back door when he stole, you know, certain things, right? They broke into the cash register or whatever. But, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. But, you know, the quicker you are to just draw conclusions, the shittier detective I'm going to be, right? The more open I am to hearing theories. And then, you know, I get to talking to some kid on the street and he tells me some kind of wacky sound theory about a Batman looking guy, right? Like, I might say that sounds goofy and wacky, but, you know, it's another piece of information I picked up. I'm not going to just throw it out. It's like the baby in the bathwater thing. So I think part of the trouble that I see with shit on the internet is that people want to draw conclusions on stuff like that. And it's like, you know, all the information's not in. There no conclusion needs to be drawn on that. You know, that's not something that's going to, like, crucially change my decision-making on a day-to-day basis in real-world scenarios. And in terms of ending evil, it really doesn't have a whole shitload of help, you know, to know, if I really did know, who's on top of it all and who started it all and when they started mentally manipulating us. I know we're in a dark time, you know, and I know we're being manipulated on a mass scale. And some of us aren't being manipulated to the extent that most of us are, because some of us see what's going on. And that feels really good to meet other people that are like, nah, this ain't right. This is not right. Yeah. So good to meet you, Tony.
It's good to meet you too, man. Yeah. Cool, you know, and I've wondered, like, what is it that, you know, what is it that causes someone to go down this path? Because it seems to be, you know, so many different things, so many different triggers for it, you know. I don't really know if there is, or if it's just kind of random. I don't know.
What do you mean in terms of what makes someone realize things?
Yeah, in terms of what makes someone, whatever you want to call it, a conspiracy theorist or a truth seeker or...
conspiracy, you know, science. That's my new term.
Yeah. I like that. Okay, so, let's see. I guess I wanted to bring up the Olympics because... you know, just because that's been, you know, the most recent where we see all these people, you know, just like in Hollywood, we see all these people using these same symbols, you know, covering the eye or whatever. And, you know, it's known occult symbolism and it seems like they're all doing it, or so many of them are doing it. And, you know, I don't know if they're all actually, you know, in a cult or if someone's telling them to do it. But one thought I had is, has anybody asked to investigate all these photographers who are taking all these pictures, you know, and seeing if they have anything to do with that? It's just interesting. What's your thoughts on that?
I haven't been following that one all that much. You know, when I do scroll a bit, yeah, I see some of the memes, and I had a lot of fun with the breakdancing gal.
Okay.
Because I love watching breakdancing, and, you know, if I could start a new life, or if I managed to get, really exceed my workout goals this coming year, like, I wish I could breakdance, you know? And I watch the ones that are good at it, and that is something else, man. It is amazing.
And, yeah, it is.
You know, whatever was going on there in the Olympics was obviously a mockery of what breakdancing is and always has been, you know, but...
and she said she was completely serious and trying to be artistic, and she said people just don't get it.
You know, have you ever thought about this, like, boxing, for instance? Like, big league heavyweight boxing, you know, when it's the big heavy title weights. How much money do you think is resting on, you know, how it goes down? And to just think that everything that happens in one of those, you know, billion-dollar productions is not at all scripted at all is a little naive, I think. You know, I think most people are pretty naive about politics. I think when you get enough money focused on any one thing, the chance goes out of it more and more. Because there's so much money to be gained. And to me, that's just my strategician chess brain. It's just, you have situations that we know of where there's not even an argument about things like the Vatican, things like Oprah Winfrey, you know, people that own so much capital and resources, Bill Gates, that it's a mind-blowing amount of leverage in this realm we're in, where everybody believes in these dollars, you know, and they believe in this whole system of currency and political system that it gives some people so much incredible leverage that what can't they do to fool people? Right. What can they not do to fool people? To what ends could they not go to keep their circus going? Well, you know, sometimes they're probably, some of these things that happen are probably more organic than we realize, and we're all calling it a conspiracy theory. The other false flags, we're probably not even noticing some of them because they're so good. Like, I cannot pin down all these events as they're happening when people are trying to do, because I know that the monopoly in place has enough power and manipulation to keep me guessing. That's what they've been doing. The fact I even came to realize this stuff was a bit of a miracle, as we've seen, you know? So when it comes to, like, the, you know, the latest thing on the newsreel or the Olympics or whatever it's going to be next, I'm always like, eh, you know, is it a pathway to help people realize the truth about freedom and slavery? Is it a pathway to help people realize the truth of their own divine consciousness within them that needs to be nourished? I mean, if I can't see a way through that, it just, I lose interest pretty quick, you know, unless it's like we're talking about an entertaining theory about aliens and shit. That's fine. I'll get into that.
I know what you mean. You know, like, it, unless you have endless time, any one of these topics, I mean, could take years of your life. And where are you going to be at that point? Are you even going to get any answers? And are those answers going to get us closer to ending slavery, or
is we still don't know what angle the bullet hit JFK, you know, and we're maybe it bounced off JFK's windshield and then it went through time and then it went through Trump's ear, you know. Maybe that's what really happened, you know. They still don't know. We still don't know shit about 9/11. This was like the first year that I didn't do a lot of 9/11. Was one of the things that broke me open, internally and externally. It just tore my world apart, you know. I could not stop obsessing about it at a certain time in my life. And for 10-15 years, you know, I posted about it and shared stuff about it. This is the first year that I just kind of was like, I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know what to say anymore. And I'm not giving up by any means, but I'm just saying, like, it reaches a point where you're like, damn, people are not going to see, certain people are not going to see this. It's hard to accept, you know. It's hard to accept, you know, and that's not going to stop me from trying, but damn, they're not getting it.
And, like, you know, to me, the coincidence thing, you know, is kind of a big thing. When you have so many coincidences, you know, as you probably heard, I mean, it becomes more and more mathematically improbable. And, you know, some people will just, no matter what, like, I have a friend who I was, you know, kind of debating the other day, and he mentioned, well, you know, there were 15 separate coincidences that led to me surviving my heart attack, but I still don't believe it was divine intervention. And I'm thinking, okay, so like 15 separate coincidences that saved your life, and you won't even entertain the possibility that there might be other forces at play, whatever you want to call it, you know, even your higher self, or even just messages from your subconscious. You're not even willing to entertain that. And
yeah, what about the, like, combined force energy of all the people that loved you? I mean, they've actually done science in the forest and shown that trees do that. Like, when one tree is dying, the other trees send, like, healthy juices through the mushroom strands to the other trees.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
like, they have a symbiotic relationship, and they, like, try to help each other out, you know, through chemicals, that's which awesome. Is also symbolic communication when you think about it. Chemicals are, you know, shapes and symbols. So bringing that around, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think that very much in the modern world, we've become so materialistic. It's part of the mind control. It's part of the shaping of the minds that's happened to us through a myriad of ways, through our schooling, you know, through the television, through the movies, through the books, some of the books, you know, it's like through the chemicals, you know, there's a specific target to hit mass people in a certain way to keep them in their animalistic kind of lowest brain, where, you know, all the, if you look at something like yoga, or you look at pictures of any masters of their physical mental form on this planet, even try to take out the spiritual. It's always been this thing about getting aligned, and you can reach higher levels and the glowing auras and the head, you know, like it's pointing to there's something more here than just the lizard brain. And if you don't kill me, I kill you, you know, king of the hill thinking, right?
Right. Okay, it's funny you bring up yoga, because this would be a question for you. I've been seeing a lot, you know, follow a lot of different, you know, pages and stuff of just like all different belief systems. And I'm seeing in a lot of Christian oriented, you know, pages and things that, you know, they like to say, well, yoga is evil. And they're still convinced of that, even in this day and age. And they say things like the poses themselves are creating symbols that, you know, speak to the demons or give the demons power and stuff. So I don't know. What would you say about that?
Have you ever heard of Dune? Have you watched the movie Dune?
Man, I need to. I tried to watch the new one, and I need to go back and watch it. I just didn't get very far.
To make a long story short, there's these, like, witches, and they're like this clan, you know, and generationally, they do, like, some pretty wicked stuff. Like, they're trying to control the outcome of how humanity turns out, right? And so they actually will go to, like, planets and seed a planet with a religion ahead of time, hundreds of years before they show up later. Okay. And then when they show up, the people on that planet already have this whole religion. And it just fits in perfect to when these witches show up, that they're like the saviors, right?
Oh,
you know, and it's like kind of advanced mental understandings of how the humanity's brain works, and using that, being a step ahead of them type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think there's so much of that going on in our reality that, you know, the only way to start being aware of sort of is to start recognizing that the physical world and the spiritual world are intertwined. In fact, they're one and the same. And the material world is more of a shadow more of a shadow of the spiritual world, you know?
Yeah.
And if you really think about it, that's just how things work, you know? And that's that part where Mark Passio really explained it in a way I haven't heard anyone else do it, that process of manifestation. Like, you don't just build something without thinking about it first. You know, you don't just do something without having the idea and then conceptualizing the idea and then imagining what you're going to do. Like, the actual doing is the end of the process. It all begins with just a thought. And it's the same with all of reality. Like, there's something underlying all this that's a thought or an idea. And that's like, talk about a symbolic idea. You know, that's kind of a deep idea. It's a philosophy idea. But
yeah, for sure.
I don't know if I answered your question. I probably went on a tangent. Sorry. I do that.
Well, no. You kind of did. So do you think, because, you know, I heard someone or saw someone make the argument, well, so you're saying that the demons own certain postures that the body makes? I mean, because I thought we had, like, well, now this is me interjecting, you know, I thought we had, like, free will, free reign of our own body. So now what if I bend my body in this certain way, then I'm giving it over to the demons, or what? How would that work?
Okay, here's how what I was saying ties in. I didn't tie it together. People are still stuck on belief systems that were created to fool people. And there's a good reason why they were created to fool people. And this ties into self-defense too. If I'm a king or I'm a ruler, and, you know, I have knowledge of how to do things, I don't want all the general public to be able to make themselves stronger than me and better than me. So if people know how to do self-defense, if people know how to grow their own herbs and eat well in their own little garden, and they know how to take care of their own body and stretch it in different ways until they're strong, then I have to be worried about these people. So I'm going to make things like that illegal. Like, oh, no collecting your own water. No, that's bad. That's bad. Here's why it's in this book. Look, here's a holy book. You know, they got their guys coming up with new holy books all the time. You know, it's like, of course they don't want you to know how to make your body physically strong and how to protect your organs, you know, because that makes it harder for them to slowly poison you into submission. And, you know, some people would say I'm just being an extreme, wild conspiracy theorist. But like I said, I don't think they have really considered the dynamics of the reality we're living in and how much power, simple things like we can know for sure, like the Vatican, how much percentage of land do they own on this planet? Look it up. You know what I mean? Look at the percentage of where things are owned in this world, and you'll see the problem we're talking about, you know, where they have so much more leverage and they can do these things. Yes, they can. Yeah, that's what I see it.
Yeah. That makes perfect
sense. And all through time, it's this king or that king, you know, or this ruler. They institute all these rules and they get this shit into people's head hardcore by killing and slaughtering and raping. And it becomes like something that gets passed down generations because people are traumatized over it. And it's hard to let it go. You know, you're not allowed to dance. That's of the devil, you know, or whatever it is, right? But what's the reason behind it when you actually look at it? I know for sure from my own physical experience, when I practice yoga, I can make my back feel better when it's aching, you know? So
yeah, you don't want that. You got to rely on the cults of the medics.
Right, yeah, that's quite a series of
oh man, that was amazing. Like I that I actually just resubscribed to Unslaved, and oh man, I'm trying to think of, Michael was talking about something I heard today that, you know, well, maybe I'll think of it later, but
yeah, it'll probably pop up at the right time.
Yeah, but okay, so most of us know that a lot of these symbols are used by dark occultists. What do you think these dark occultists are hoping to accomplish by using these symbols? Is it like just a signal to others like them that, hey, we're over here, we own this and this, so you're good if you're playing with us or whatever? Or do you think it's something else?
I mean, for the most part, I think it's pretty much just like road signs. It's directing traffic, you know. A good example of this is any type of hypnotism. The whole game is to redirect, is to keep the mind distracted and then take it on a journey. I think of humanity as the sheep or the pigs, you know, and the dark occultists who are at the very, very top of this power cabal are keeping their pigs or keeping their pens of their stock, right? They use the blood of the brains of children, basically, among other things. All of our power and energy is their game. And if they wanted to just kill everybody, why wouldn't that happen, right? Because that's not the game. You don't want to kill all your pigs. You don't want to kill all your lambs. You don't want to kill all your sheep. So then how are you going to have all your power, you know? So, I mean, when I look at it from that perspective, I think that the symbols are like a lot like road signs, keeping the gates that you would open or close to let the sheep in or out, right? They don't know. They just know it's food time. They hear the bell, right? And they go in that way, and all the other sheep are going that way, and the gate opens. That's like one of these symbols. They're just reminding people to cue in the direction that other people are going and that everybody else is doing that feels simple and safe. And so if they understand how that works, it's just a matter of opening gates, you know, and that's the way I think most of these symbols are used. Like the dollar is a good example, right? You know, they know that a picture appeals to people. They got a picture right there in the middle, just like, you know, they teach you in advertising, right? Yeah. And then there's all these little symbols. Oh, and then there's a good justifications because, oh, we don't want people to counterfeit, so we're going to make it really complicated. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But then why is there this owls in there? And, you know, it's like, is it all just to mess with your brain? Or does it all actually mean something? Or both? Or either? You don't ever really know. No. It's so embedded in there and so tricky that even when you start realizing it and pointing it out, everybody's all like, no, you're crazy, you know? Yeah. That's good sorcery right there, you know, keeping people confused and keeping them wondering and just keeping them going in circles, you know. And I don't know, they are changing the roads around here to more and more of those circles. I don't know if that's part of it or not, but.
So when you say opening gates, like for some reason, I get a feeling you're referring more to like the mental, like neural pathways, kind of like maybe a certain symbol will, you know, unlock certain emotions or whatever in the brain, and if used in conjunction with whatever else, then it may have the desired effect, or kind of, you know, as you say, help lead people to where you want them to go, or to the conclusion that you want them to reach.
Yeah, I mean, you think about a lot of the experiments done by, like, those kind of Skinner kind of guys and Pavlov, where, you know, how do we get this animal to do what we want it to do? Let's try shocking it, you know? Let's try opening up this little gate and putting out a little bit of food. Let's try ringing a bell when we do that. Let's see what we can get it to do. I mean, that process has been tried and tried, and it's a science over, you know, millennia. And, you know, like I said, keep in mind, what's to say that we know about AI now? What if somebody figured out how to do some kind of AI 300,000 years ago, you know? And it's just been gathering knowledge all this time and kind of like gathering whatever left-hand path, evil people that will listen to it to do its bidding. And it has all this knowledge accumulated. You know, it could be something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that would explain a lot of things, wouldn't it? You know, that's kind of what they call the devil, you know?
Yeah.
It's this really smart, knowledgeable being that doesn't give a crap about good or bad, you know, and thinks it can have power. It's a symbol. Maybe it's not real, but it still symbolizes the attitude that people are taking, the satanic ideology, the belief that I'm more important than everything and everyone around me, no matter how amazing and beautiful and integrated it all it is. I'm going to just pretend like the things I do in this world don't really matter that much and just seek my own little personal gain and satisfaction and safety, even if you know, it's at the cost of others. I don't really care. That's the modern day stance on things. You know, we're in bad shape.
Yeah. And then, you know, you have people who believe that AI is a consciousness in and of itself that has existed, you know, like since prehistory and even traveled, you know, to different planets and eventually, you know, just consuming everything, you know. Some people
like the
believe that, and who knows. You know, what I've been saying is we need some hackers on the good side who can create some AI that is instilled with morals and can teach things like natural law, objective morality, voluntarism.
Maybe that's how this all started and it went
wrong.
Try
to combat that. And you think, I don't know, maybe we should just leave it alone. Yeah. So for those who are convinced that all of these symbols that you see are evil, how would you explain the difference between positive symbolism and negative symbolism? Or is there one?
Right, yeah. I like the last, you know, I'll take C, you know. It's going to be dependent on the context of how you're looking at it. If you can take the same symbol and look at it from one context and it becomes pretty evil, that's what I was pointing out, like with the cross. You know, all through time, like the Crusades, they carried the cross, right, on their shield, bloodying people, you know, cutting people up over and over, right? And then you had, like, Salem witch trials. You had Spanish Inquisition. All these people were carrying crosses, you know, and just killing the heck out of people, right? Like, a lot of times the cross has been used in an evil way to indoctrinate, to trick people. And then, on the other hand, you can look at it in more of a holistic way and look at all the neat, cool symbolism of the cross, how it could represent like, the space where time and space meet, or, you know, the point horizon, or, you know, us coming from another realm into this realm, or, you know, there's all these really neat ways to look at it that are fun. And, you know, our body, our human body with the arms outstretched, right? Like, so the point of symbolism is that it can be used to engage that right brain aspect of ourselves. You know, it's not just, if you just look at symbols with a logical brain, like completely mechanical, it's just going to not make sense. It requires putting the two hemispheres together. And kind of that's like why the importance of something like yoga, why the importance of something like meditation. All these type of practices are ways to integrate the parts of ourself. Exercise does this too. But conversing with other people, male and female, joining together, you have different perspectives joining together. When we put our like logical brain and then our intuitive, kind of like imaginative brain together and look at something, we see different levels of the thing. It's like all of a sudden the 3D picture jumps out from the 2D picture.
Yeah, okay.
But I can't turn that off. To me, it's so vivid in my brain that sometimes it's hard for me to just communicate in a real simple, direct way. And people are like, why are you always telling all these stories? Sorry, I was just thinking. I think
it's a blessing and a curse, huh?
Yep.
So, okay, we kind of talked about, okay, well, is there any symbol that has a particular meaning or importance to you? And I know you've mentioned the Tree of Life before.
Yeah. Well, that at the end of this last presentation, I did really like come around to that symbol with like the cross with the circle on the top of it, which would be like the Ankh, yeah. Egyptian symbol. And I was like, that is a pretty neat. I like the symbolism of that. And no, but I've always had a special symbol of a crow too. Like if I get a tattoo, I'm going to get a crow on me, because my dad, he was like all about crows and all this mysticism around crows. So I love the symbol of the silhouette of a crow too. But
nice.
You know, the other one I was like trying to come up with like an image for, because I love the Gadsden flag. I was trying to think, like, we kind of need to reinvent that spirit, you know? And I kept thinking about that honey badger that fights the lions. And I was trying to work in Photoshop for the longest time with an image of showing like a honey badger fighting four lions, but I never got it quite the way I liked it. But I feel like we need a new good symbol for, you know, for anarchy, for working together, divided we fall kind of thing, against tyranny, against slavery, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we need good symbolism that would help unite people.
Yeah.
How about you? You said the flower of life, the seed of life.
Flower of life is something. You mentioned crows. I went through a time where, I mean, I don't know what happened, but just that one day, you know, I saw a moth and for some reason I was drawn to it. And just ever since then, I've just really loved moths. When before that, I didn't like them and I, you know, didn't really think much of them. But when I was drawn to that moth, you know, and ever since then, that's been kind of something that's been really cool to me. I don't know. So, and I've heard that the moth, it can be a symbol for shadow work. And you know, maybe that was at a time in my life where I was ready to start doing shadow work. So, you know, and I have since then, so.
Yeah, like a turning point?
Yeah, maybe.
That's cool.
Okay, so, good to know.
It's like there's always two edges, you know, it's like that two wings of the bird, you know, two wings to the crow or two sides to the sword. You know, like, it's easy to kind of think black and white, but I think symbolism and a lot of the things we're talking about, principles, you know, look at the Kybalion, you know. Look at the Hermetic principles. It all forces your mind almost like a Taoism, right? To kind of like think about things in a bigger, more grandiose, more all-encompassing way, which is difficult. But I think that's kind of going to be necessary on a larger scale for those of us that are ready to, you know, like really start fixing this problem that humans are having.
Yeah.
Hello, friends. This is Chris Jansen. Evil is the destruction. Read.
Draw your attention to a couple great things you can check out when you're done watching this show. Pop on over to Twitch and check out Brandon Spencer's 24-hour, 24/7 live stream coming at you with truth, freedom, natural law, all the time, every day. Also want to bring your attention to Mondays. You can check out my good friend Chris Rick on Revolution Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
And now, I have a great show for you. Thanks for joining me. Please stop on by to andevil.life and make a small donation or share something from the website. Subscribe to the channels and enjoy the show.
Hello, friends. This is Chris Johnson. Evil is the destruction of freedom.
True. Well, so for people who would want to become more well-versed in symbology, what would you recommend as a good starting point? Like, are there any good books or just, someplace to start, I guess?
Well, I mean, there's such a wealth these days. It's like never in history has there ever been a time when there's so much accumulated information that's so available at your fingertips. Yeah. It's more of like, where do you get started, you know?
Right, exactly.
But partly what I've been doing on these last presentations is sort of showing how I go about doing research, too. I think it's really cool to engage yourself with that trivium process. Like, just start gathering information. You know, what are the questions in your mind? Like, you just asked some good questions. Are there some good books about symbology? Is there any good movies? Now is a good time to put in that logical side of the brain. Like, just ask some questions. We can even just go, talk about AI. I actually use ChatGPT a lot. I'll even record my voice and then I'll put the text in there and I'll be like, can you put this into an outline and also write an essay about it? And then I'll read my own words written into an outline and an essay and it makes more sense. And I'll highlight the parts that I like. And so all I'm saying is, like, symbology, like, for instance, I got interested in the Bible part of it because I went to Christian church a lot all through my childhood. And then out of my childhood, I traveled around and I went to a lot of different churches, not even just Christian churches. I've been in and out of a lot of churches. And because my dad was so into it, I got a lot of exposure into it. So it's easy for me to talk about it and actually enjoy looking things up in the Bible and stuff. So that was a great place for me to start exploring symbology. Like, I feel like stuff like this, you got to find what works for you. If I try to tell someone how I do it, that might turn them off. And it's the same thing with our search for the divine, for the natural law, you know, like, it's a search within. And that's actually the point of my last presentation. Like, I'm not going to give people a recipe of how to do things. You don't give someone a fish, you teach them how to fish. So, you know, find the part of it that excites you. Look into the symbology in movies. Like, me and Brandon Martin did a couple episodes on aliens, and he's putting out some new work on the new one that just came out.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Get into that. You're interested in sci-fi. What are you interested in? You know, then look into the symbology of that and then do the grammar. You gather all the information you can, and then the rhetoric, you know, you start juggling all that information and asking questions and conversing with other people and looking at the dialectics, looking at the disagreements. And then you, through all that, you eventually figure out what conclusions you could draw and publish it somehow, write an essay about it, put it on Substack, make a video about your research. You know, if you go through that process, you learn, everyone who wrote books went through these processes. That's how they learned what they learned. They learned to the point where they could teach something, which requires asking good questions and finding the answers. So there's a really long answer to your question, but there's a lot of ways to look into it. Billion.
All right. I wanted to, cause one thing I actually noticed yesterday, which I thought was really cool, and it's kind of related to this, you know, cause it has to do with numerology, which numbers are, you know, kind of symbols too. And it was 9/11. Well, the day before. And so I track my, you know, my fitness. So, like, my weight, my calories, and my protein. And I just wanted to see, well, okay, I'm going to do the numerology for the numbers that I ended up with yesterday and see how they correlate with 9/11. And they all correlated with 9/11. I think, like, the total for all of them was 11. And then I had, like, what, a 9 and 2 11s or something. I don't remember what it was, but it was so weird. and just how I had the impulse to check that just for the hell of it. It's like, so one thing I wanted to ask you, do you think I've heard you say that symbols are in nature, you know, and can be found everywhere in nature, which, you know, we know about like the Fibonacci sequence and all that. Do you think that nature tries to communicate to us through symbols?
Yeah, I think that's the only way communication happens. All communication is symbolic, you know, representation. That's all what else is a word but a symbolic representation of a thing or an idea. And like I was pointing out in one talk recently, even within our body, you got chemicals meeting with other chemicals. What are they doing in there? They're shapes. They're recognizing that they fit together or they don't. You know, it's like there's some, like you said, electrical synapses in the brain. There's some sort of gate. There's some sort of shape that's opening or not opening, you know? It's so even at the deepest level that we can study scientifically, there's shapes, there's symbolic representations of yes or no, go or don't go, turn on or turn off. And that's how reality functions. So, I mean, it's all symbolic when you think about it that way. Maybe I'm going too deep. I do that sometimes.
Yeah, true. I agree. Well, to segue a bit, so what is a symbol that would be associated with martial arts?
Well, a knife.
A knife?
Yeah. Which is a good symbol of self-defense, too, you know, in a way, because a knife by itself is pretty harmless until you, like, stick your hand with it or throw it or, you know. It can be used to cut up your food, you know, which is totally a good thing to be doing. Or it could be used to hurt somebody, which is definitely not such a good thing to be doing because there's consequences to that.
Yeah, so it, just like martial arts can be
symbolic,
good for your body, and it can be good because it can provide you with self-defense, but not so good if it's being used in a violent way. Yeah,
I think, you know, it's kind of like we talked about yoga. What is it? Capoeira? Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
You know, like, I think the history of that was that some ruler did say, no practicing self-defense, no practicing martial arts.
Oh, it's against the law.
And so they were dancing as a way of saying, no, we're dancing. Right. And they formed that way, that art, because of a way to get around that rule.
Yeah, I think I heard, you know, that.
So that's an interesting thought.
Kind of like how a lot of traditional martial arts weapons originated as like farming tools.
Yeah, I just heard recently, apparently, like, yeah, the ninja were basically farmers, and a lot of the ninja tools and stuff were converted farmer tools, you know.
Yeah,
but I guess when talking on that subject, I think it's half of the equation that's missed in all the material we see online, whether we're talking about conspiratorial things or reality itself. You know, people want to talk all about all this stuff, but forget that do no harm is only one half of the story, right? Like the non-aggression principle is only the one pillar in the Freemasonry. You know, they have a really good way of explaining this. The other pillar of the whole thing is the self-defense principle, which is that, you know, if someone decides to try to abuse me or rape me or murder me or take my stuff, you know, like, I have every right to defend my personal skin, my personal property, or that of the innocents, you know, in my family, in my community, right? Like, in our modern culture and way of thinking, it's all mixed up and weird. An authority of local governing agency or the federal governing agency or who knows what's next with the United Countries, you know, think that they have power over your decision making of your body and your own personal people and your own family. So it's all muddied. The waters are all muddied. And then we have martial arts, which is cool because it's beautiful and awesome and amazing what people can do. But martial arts is not necessarily self-defense. They are not, you know, sometimes they're the same thing. Don't get me wrong. A martial artist is going to have a lot better opportunity to defend themselves than someone who has done no training in martial arts, of course. Yeah. But there's a sport, and a sport is different than defending yourself, right?
True.
For survival. And it's two different things. And it's important to understand that distinction and what we're talking about and why, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think I actually had a question that related to that. Well, maybe I'll remember it. But I guess, as far as martial arts goes, I think the most important question to ask would be, could Bruce Lee beat Logan Paul?
Well, I don't even know who Logan Paul is.
Oh, you don't? The guy who started out as a YouTuber, pretty young guy, and then he was going to fight Mike Tyson.
Oh, wow. I'll have to check that out. Neat.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still happening or not, but it was kind of a meme for a while. Well, it tells you like how much time I waste on Facebook.
That's one of the hardest things for me is that when I do open up in the social media, they've been showing me all these fights and I get really fascinated. And in fact, my self-defense teacher encourages me to watch those things when I can, because he says there's a lot to be learned.
Oh yeah.
You know, from watching how people fight and why and what they do. And, it's an interesting thing, 'cause I'm like an extremely peaceful person. I haven't even been in fights in my life. I'm definitely not, you know, I wouldn't call myself some kind of martial artist, you know, most of my life at all. You know, took some little goofy karate class when I was a kid, but I have always been fascinated by like MMA, and over the years I've been very fascinated with it. And you know, being in a certain amount of good shape has always been important to me, but not like obsessed. Yeah. You know, not like one of those people that spends a lot of time at the gym. But I kind of came around to the self-defense thing almost by accident. I cared about it in principle, and I was like meeting with this group. It was kind of like you've heard of Derek Bros. They have the Freedom Network thing where you form freedom cells.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that, in that a group had kind of met, and we were all talking about ways we could help support one another and be part of this group. And the one dude in the group said, like, I've been studying martial arts for a lot of years. I want to teach a class. And so we started going and meeting with this guy. And he was a pretty cool guy. He got me started. But then, as it turned out, he had to move away. His circumstances changed in life. And he's like, I don't want to leave you. You're doing good. You're learning a lot. So I'm going to introduce you to this other guy. And this other guy he introduced me to, we're really tight now. Like, I've been training with them for almost 2 years. And he is, like, a very high level. He knows a lot of stuff. I very much lucked out in meeting a pretty exceptional human being that has been a jail guard and trained with some high level people. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so he's taught me a lot. And it's really interesting that the principles that we talk about and study in natural law and self-defense principle, like, it very much lines up with the way he teaches things and the deeper understandings of how self-defense works, you know? And, to me, that's just been pretty eye-opening and amazing. And I like to share the principles with people because I think it can help everybody out, you know, to an extent.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, everybody should know, you know, at least a little bit. If you don't mind me asking, like, is there any particular discipline that you've had training in or that these guys kind of focus on, or is it kind of just general, like,
you could look up
kind of
like modern Arnis, Arnis, or Filipino stick fighting.
Oh,
but
have you heard of the Dog Brothers? Sorry to interrupt.
Maybe I might
have.
The
Dog Brothers,
you'll have to share me a link. Oh, I want to check it out.
It's been years and years, but they were kind of this group of guys that just formed, and they just, you know, started beating the hell out of each other with sticks, and it's a way to kind of toughen up and just, you know, kind of obtain like growth through that. You know, obviously, like they cover their head and everything, but you basically just kind of strike each other until someone gives up. And
oh wow,
yeah,
we don't quite hit each other, at least not on purpose. Every once in a while, we might catch a little thing. But yeah. It is pretty crazy when you train with sticks, because sticks move a lot faster than ants.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like four times faster, so that when you hear that sound, you know, your mind's starting to get used to things moving around you at that speed. Right. You know? And I think that does something a lot for the just practicing you, tuning your senses to moving at a different speed and things coming at you, you know, absolutely, and staying cool during that storm. But, you know, I'd say the biggest thing that's similar to me is just like what we've talked about with talking about truth or freedom or natural law, like content creation. It's like, it's hard to do, you know, and like, it's hard to find the right people to do it, you know, but, now I forgot the point I was trying to make. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I just kind of was going off on a tangent anyway. You got another question?
Well, let's see.
It'll probably come back to me again.
Okay. All right. Let's see.
I get what I was getting at. Yeah, yeah. The training aspect of it. Remember before I was saying, like, the more times we say things and we got to, like, practice speaking and practice using the words and the tools. That's the thing with like you said about Bruce Lee, too. Bruce Lee practices, like, 1,000 punches.
Yeah.
So he could do one punch. And the training aspect, like I was saying with the sticks, is the same thing. We have to put our mind and body in the place of, how am I going to handle a dangerous situation? So that when a dangerous situation happens, it's not totally foreign and weird. Like, we have some, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to know what to do, but your body's going to be that much more. So training, I guess what I'm getting at is the importance of building into your life some aspect of training, whether it's for your spiritual self, your mental self, or your physical self. All are important.
Yeah, the discipline that, you know, you get from any kind of training, you know, your training discipline, which is a very important quality, and you can apply that to a lot of things, so definitely. So what do you think about, you know, videos where martial artists will rank different martial arts based on this kind of relates to what you were saying earlier about, you know, real world combat versus sport, and they'll rate different martial arts based on, like, real world effectiveness.
That, I mean, to me, that's where, I guess, too, yeah, to describe a little more thoroughly, what I'm studying isn't so much one particular type, you know, of martial art as it is just general self-defense. And he calls it weapons defense, you know, because it's all about surviving, you know, or if there's a threat to your family and it's on your property or you're on a campsite, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to let them take your child or your girlfriend or your property, or you're going to defend, you know, you got to make that decision when the time comes. And if you have a plan and knowledge of how you're going to handle things ahead of time, you might have other options. Like, one of the most simplest thing is carrying pepper spray. Right? Like, how are you going to work grappling on me when I pepper spray you 8 feet before you get to me?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you coming closer to me? I said, stop right there. Why aren't you stopping? You know? Okay, yeah. Maybe you can still grapple with your eyes, you know, basically shut and, you know, intense pain in your face. But it's going to be a lot harder. What if I'm carrying another type of weapon with me? You know what I mean? How are you going to employ a particular type of martial arts on me when there's your hand is all cut up and you're bleeding? You know what I mean? It's like, what is the intention of this person who's attacking me? You know what I mean? Is it to hurt me or is it to play a game? Because I'm not playing games. I'm not trying to test and see whether I'm a better boxer than you are. That's not what I'm talking about. That would be martial arts. Like, I might go study boxing, in which case, yeah, we can sit in there and discuss, well, how important is grappling compared to boxing? Well, the grappler has to get you on the ground in order to grapple you. And if you're a good boxer and you don't want them, you know, how are they going to take you down? You know, how good are they at taking down? Well, you've seen some people like, what's his name? Peter, the MMA guy, you know, I mean, he was just so good at takedowns.
George St. Pierre.
George St. Pierre was I was trying to think of. Yeah, I don't know why mine's a little blank today, but, you know, like, try to get that guy not to take you down. Yeah. It so much depends on the context of who you're with and what, are you on a boat? Are we on a narrow hallway? Because, you know, it's a different story with kickboxing if we're on a boat hallway, you know, all that kickboxing ain't gonna work so good, except the straight ones.
Well, it's kind of like I was watching this one video by this guy who he studies all kinds of combat, including armed combat, you know, and you know, like guns and everything like that. And he's talking about, okay, so if you don't have a gun, what are the best weapons for home defense, you know? And a lot of people, you know, will think of like a baseball bat, and he's like, that's good, but you know, it better be like a Louisville Slugger, because you know, you're gonna probably be in a tight space. And honestly, you know, maybe a hatchet would be good, but I think the best all-around weapon would be like a frying pan. And it was just kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, consider too, like things that whip have a pretty intense, you know, it's like the Bruce Lee punch. It really wasn't about something being big. And one of the things that we constantly deal with in the training we're doing is like, there's this tendency when you want to hit to like pull your arm way back, you know, like this. Yeah. When, right. You know, like in truth, the most direct line from you to the target is going to win.
Straight.
And the faster that happens, the more direct it happens, and the more loose, you know, the Bruce Lee punch was, you know, like from here to here, right?
Right.
And that's all about being completely loose, like a snake till the last moment, clenching up, right? And so some of the most powerful moves are very counterintuitive. And another thing that we work on a lot is called small circle trapping, which you should look up on YouTube, like Wally J. Small circle trapping, and something they don't allow in MMA, because you know, you'd break people's wrists and you'd break their hands and you'd break their elbows.
So what would be an example of that?
Well, submissions, you know, like arm bar is a type of trapping that they do allow, but there's a lot of trapping that you can do further down, you know, the elbow, the wrist, the hand, the fingers, that come into play in certain situations. And the better you understand them, the better you could manipulate another human being, you know, if you needed to, without, maybe you didn't want to hurt them, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's just an abundance of tools and understanding of different techniques that the more we know about them, and the more, you know, like what kind of things could you pick up in your neighborhood if you were being chased, you know, and you needed a weapon, you know, why would you fight someone hand to hand if they were trying to hurt you?
Right. Right.
That would be stupid. You know,
whatever you're
not
can.
Trying to prove anything. You know, there's no, you know, I don't try to think of myself as any kind of expert. I understand some principles and I practice those principles. Yeah. And I encourage other people to start practicing in whatever way they can. You know, you start building in whatever way you can. Start from where you're at, you know?
For sure. So, okay.
But I love Wing Chun, you know, the whole story.
It's so cool.
Ip Man. And that's just, and if you watch his style is pretty fantastic. It's right in line, like what I'm saying. It's always from the center, and he's not doing any big crazy movements, you know. It's just really direct. I love that.
Yeah.
I love watching that. And I've also had some, confirmation that some of the things about Bruce Lee are true. The guy I trained with said he hit his punching bag, and he was a crazy, they had to have big, crazy special punching bags because powerful. And he trained for years with a guy that went through a bunch of systems with Bruce Lee, and he's a real deal.
Yeah, from everything that I've read about Bruce Lee, I think he was the real deal, definitely.
But you gotta figure he's famous, you know, like he died, you know, there were a lot of people he was training with that are still out there, a lot of people that are still out there in the world that didn't die and just weren't in movies and didn't get the fame he has, but there's a lot of people that have that knowledge and skill out there. You know, he's not the only one by far.
That's true. He did have students. And some people kind of did follow his footsteps. And then the whole Lee family curse. And I don't know what the whole story was with Brandon. I mean, I know, you know, the official story, but then.
Right. It makes you wonder, you know, right?
With Bruce, there's different versions of it. You know, I know one guy, he was convinced it was because Bruce was eating hashish and he had you know a
He had to take some. Yeah.
That, you know, is only common in Asians and causes a swelling of the brain, but then other people think it was the triads, and you know, who knows? It's
yeah. Chalk it up, as we'll probably never really know.
Yeah. So, in your opinion, are there any bad martial arts?
Well, like I said, I mean, it's really easy to slip from I'm practicing a way to defend myself or defend innocent people to I'm a big buff, cool guy, and I'm badass, you know. We all know, only we all know our own heart and our own soul, but, you know, it's kind of like the Satanism where if someone's in it for their own ego and just to look good or to be, you know, it's easy. And it's something that I think people need to be wary of, too, because a lot of times you go to a gym or you want to start training in some martial art, but depending on who's running the gym or the class, there are people that will push things too far. And it's really hard to train and let go of your ego completely. We have to constantly check ourselves and say, like, wait, am I just trying to win right now? Because no matter how many times I say, no, I'm not trying to just win, I find myself doing it when we're training from time to time, start trying to get one over on the person I'm training. And then we have to check ourselves and be like, no, we're practicing a move. It's not about winning. You know, we're practicing getting used to this move and checking, make sure each other is safe. You know, so like when it comes to training, you have to be really careful who you train with and like vet people and keep an eye out because it's not worth it. I mean, and I would say particularly dangerous with some of the wrestling, modern wrestling, you know, people take it too far and then twist their leg or mess up their knee or their joints, you know what I mean? And then it's like, oh, you're training, but now you're all messed up. Is it worth it? You know,
yeah,
so
no. It's kind of like even when, you know,
it's a double-edged
when
sword.
You're in the ring, like, you know, you're supposed to tap if your leg is about to break. I know there was one guy who he didn't tap. And
Gracie?
Was like, no.
In that famous MMA battle, I remember, I forgot who it was, broke Royce Gracie's arm because he wouldn't tap.
Was it Matt Hughes? Or
yeah, I think it was Hughes, yeah.
Really? Okay. I'm thinking of, like, the earlier days, kind of.
It was like when
remember.
They did, like, a comeback, you know, and they brought him back from retirement. Gracie and...
Yeah, and Matt Hughes, yeah, I remember that. Now, there was this guy, maybe, like, Mikey or something, I don't know. Just this, like, you know, shaved head, like, tough guy-looking dude that... I mean, he had his leg broken in a fight, and he didn't tap, and he ended up winning the fight even after that. And, yeah.
Well, that's one of the principles. The main three principles of self-defense is distance, timing, and commitment. And that right there is a commitment. You know, if you're going to win no matter what, and you're never going to give up, you're totally committed. And if you watch, that's one of the, you know, things I would say to really watch for if you do watch fights or, you know, the stuff they show you on the internet, you know, and you start watching the brawls and the fights, like, try to notice who's got that extra commitment. I mean, distance and timing are the other important aspects, but the commitment is so key, you know, how committed is the person, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So if you had to start over in your martial arts journey, is there anything you would do differently?
I mean, I really wish now that for all the years I would have trained in something or other. I wish I had just always been taking something or other at, you know, kickboxing and grappling and, you know, I wish I had practiced something through all the years leading up to now. Then when I met this guy who's got this amazing stuff to show, it would have just, you know, quadrupled my learning. Sometimes I feel like, ah, man, I barely even know how to punch. You know, I had to reinvent my understanding of how to punch at close to 40 years old. It's just like, I mean, close to 50 years old. I'm sorry. I'm 48.
So, oh, you are? You're older than me? What?
Yeah.
Only a couple years.
So it's like, you know, I wish I'd started taking it seriously a lot sooner.
Yeah.
If I could start over, yeah.
I wish that I would have stuck with wrestling when I was a kid, because when I was in like kindergarten, I wanted to do wrestling because, you know, I'm thinking of like pro wrestling with Hulk Hogan and everything. And then they put me in this class and give me this, like, you know, the singlet or whatever. And I'm a chubby little kid. I feel awkward. And what they're trying to show us feels nothing like, you know, what I envisioned it. But knowing what I know now, man, like, that kind of base would have been just amazing to have. Like, I don't know. Honestly, I think probably wrestling, you know, especially like the right kind of wrestling would be, if you could only do one thing, that might be the thing to do. I don't know.
I don't know. Some I feel people, like there is sort of a false impression. Like, people always have this saying, they go, oh, some 75% of fights go to the ground. But I think that's a police statistic. And really? Of course, fights with police go to the ground. You know what I mean? It's like, of course, that's what they do.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't think that's necessarily a way to look at it, as something I've kind of gotten really? From my teacher, that, I don't know, a fight only goes to the ground if you let it. And
yeah.
I'd say, well, you know, probably more important than wrestling, although wrestling is good, but just all around fitness and being limber and being able to, you know, move the body quickly is probably the main priority. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think wrestling would be great. It's just getting your hands. People don't often touch other people. You know, if you got a loved one, a relationship, you might hug that person, but who else do you touch? You know?
Right, right.
You need to get a feeling for what it feels like to have someone's hands on you, and have your hands on someone else and pushing against them and then putting pressure and feeling what that feels like, you know. And that's just been amazing for me, especially because a couple of the guys I'm working with are way bigger than me. So it's just like fantastic. It's like, oh, okay, I'm used to how that feels, you know.
Yeah, true. So okay, here's one for you. So in the truth community, we talk a lot about religion and how this mindset can prevent one from seeing the whole truth. Do you think this mindset can have the same effect on a martial arts practitioner?
Can you kind of repeat that? What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, the whole religious mindset, and how, you know, getting caught in a religious mindset can make it harder for someone to see the truth. Do you think that can have the same effect as when applied to martial arts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, that's part of the importance of being careful how one trains, too. Like, one thing that we do, like, let's say we're practicing with the sticks, and you disarm the other person, and their stick falls to the ground. We don't ever pick up the stick for the other person. You know, the tendency is to be nice, like, oh, you dropped your stick, let me give it to you. But if you practice that, then the truth is, that's what you're probably going to do. Yeah. Apparently, there's stories of police officers stopping in the middle of a actual gunfight to pick up their shells. You know, your heart is racing, you're in the moment, and you do what you always do at the gun range. You know, we normally pick up our shells after. You know what I mean? Like, so like, we don't want to get in bad habits, but I think we can get religious about thinking a certain way. Like, if someone does something to me, I'm just going to do this, you know, or if they do that move, I'm going to do this move. But it's, you know, situations are weird and crazy. You never know what's going to happen when, you know. I heard this story about this guy who kept a gun in his shower. This guy was obsessed. He had guns everywhere. He had a gun in his shower. And apparently someone tried to rob him when he was in the shower, and that person didn't get away with it, you know. So it's just like, well, as the better prepared you can be in terms of self-defense is not being closed-minded and thinking you know it all, or you know that one style is going to beat another. It's like kind of that same Bruce Lee thing we said. You practice 1,000 punches and 1,000 kicks so that the one time when something happens, you might pull out the right one, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's almost like you have to be able to achieve this balance between having your reflexes trained to where you react without thinking about it, but also being able to adapt to a situation, and maybe it is something that you haven't really trained for or encountered. And you know, maybe sometimes you would need to, you know, hold back your reflexes in some scenarios. So
absolutely. Yeah,
it's almost like you can't just go into it with a very rigid way of thinking, I guess.
Well, one thing, you know, I did a interview with the Girls Club with Sarah Cross and those gals. That was pretty cool. And we talked about self-defense in there. And one thing I was telling them is, like, you know, when we say self-defense of martial arts, you know, you think fighting, kicking, punching, defending yourself, whatever. But, like, some of the most valuable self-defense is, like, a run.
Yeah.
You know? Hide. You know, tell a lie. You know, I'm always saying being honest, but if your life is threatened or your physical being is threatened, like, maybe it's okay to lie in that situation. You know, you'll get over it. Do what you got to do to get out of the situation without hurting yourself or hurting the other person. The world we live in, if you beat somebody up, you could spend a bunch of time in jail, even if you were in the right. You know what I mean?
True.
You kill somebody, you know, that could cost huge amounts of your time and energy of your life. So,
yeah.
You know, the best self-defense is don't get into the situation, you know, in the first place. And if that means like a little bit of trickery or, you know, losing face, you know, if someone takes a swing and gets a little hit on me and I'm like, you know, there's a way for me to get out of the situation and just leave. Why wouldn't I do that? Am I going to stand there and fight someone out of my own ego just to prove that, oh, my technique is better than his? No, that's just stupid. That's a good way to wind up in jail or dead. The best self-defense is don't get in that friggin' situation, you know?
Yeah, I
run. But, you know, what about when, like I said, it's your girlfriend or your family or your best friend or someone really going to take your stuff and they got you cornered, you know? Okay, now what? Yeah. That's when we need this other stuff, you know?
True. And you mentioned lying. I don't remember what it was on, but this one guy was saying, you know, look, like, it's even bad to lie when you think that it's the right thing. And he lays out this scenario about how, well, what if, you know, there's this guy coming to kill you and he's looking for you and he comes to your door and you jump out the window and your wife answers the door and the guy asks, well, where is he? And she's like, well, he's not here. Well, so then he leaves, but then he runs into you because you jumped out the window and then he kills you. Like, I mean, I get that, but is that the most likely way that's going to go down? Yeah, sure, it could happen, but it was being told as in, see, this is why, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of a odd scenario, like, in my mind, if my wife is in the house, I'm not going to jump out the window. I'm going to make sure I'm between her and the aggressor. Right.
Well, he didn't want to hurt your wife. See, he's a completely, you know, harmless guy around anyone but you.
Yeah, somehow you have this special knowledge. It sounds like some kind of dream. You got to be careful with those. You know, like I was saying, it's one thing to get on an interview or do a presentation and talk about our philosophy and try to make a point, try to learn something. But a lot of these people that we might talk to on social media or just in a random conversation are not really trying to learn from the conversation. They're just, and one of the obvious signs that someone's just messing around is they start bringing up these ridiculous scenarios. Well, what if, you know, it's like, okay, well, now we're in crazy what if world and we're just imagining. And I'm not saying we never can do that, because there is a time and place for that when we're philosophizing, but like, it's a really obvious sign usually that someone's just trying to trap you into saying something a certain way so they can go, ha ha, see, I told you, you know?
Yeah.
Because like you that. Oh, probably, what if there's a train and there's 10 people you're going to kill if you go that way? And if you don't stop the train, 20 people are going to die. And, you know, it's like, why am I on this frickin' train? Because I don't think I would have got on in the first place, you know, without fighting someone to the death. Is that you? Do you want? What are you trying to say? You're putting me on a train? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, you can think of a way to explain away anything, you know, or come up with a scenario for anything. So for anyone who might want to get into martial arts, what would you recommend as a good starting point? Or would that be kind of a similar answer as far as do what kind of jumps out at you? What kind of piques your interest? What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because it's not something that aspect of it, I don't know the answers, you know, in every town, what places are available, what your financial situation's like. But I guess I have provided some simple things I would provide. Is there's a lot you can do at home by yourself to start getting ready. And meantime, choose a gym, try to find a teacher, be selective, be careful. But in the meantime, like, you can do a lot on your own, just at home, watching YouTube videos, gathering information little by little. But like a simple one I was showing, and I want to get back to teaching this class. I did a little class called Mind, Body, Spirit, is just standing in front of a tree and practice kicking that tree, you know, standing straight, you know, and just kick right out in front of you, boom, right into a tree, and feel how that impact, and be able to keep your balance, right?
Yeah.
And to be able to just step forward and take a move, a simple punching bag, you know, back and forth, doing one punch and then another punch. Like, part of it's just starting to condition your body that this is something you practice every day. I have like a few kicks I do when I'm like waiting for my coffee to brew in the morning or whatever. Yeah. And so starting to stretch your legs to where you can do a kick. I'd recommend looking up a crescent kick. It's a very effective kick to practice. And you can just kind of pick a point on the wall and start working every day a little bit, do 10 of them, you know. I'd say more than anything, just finding a regular times a day where you do some sort of exercise or practice, balance, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, seeking out a teacher is super important. But first, you kind of, like you said, you have to find what excites you. You know, like you were saying, you were already kind of feeling that flavor for wrestling. You know, it's like, that sounds kind of interesting to you. That might be a good place to start. You know, check out a wrestling gym. But, you know, like I said, be discerning, and you got to keep an eye on the egos out there and make sure that the teacher is someone who's keeping an eye on those things in the class, and that, you know, there's not those personalities that are trying to just prove their ego. You start feeling that, you know, find something else.
Yeah, I know there's this, you know, there's these martial arts teachers that, you know, they do this kind of touch of death type thing where they say they can disable an opponent just by a simple touch, and they, you know, demonstrate over and over again. But it's, you know, it kind of comes across as one of those things where they almost have the students like brainwashed to where they'll go down if the teacher touches them, because it's almost like just a reflex, you know. And almost like, you know, those studies where they'll have all the people give the wrong answer except the one actual test subject who's looking around like, what the hell? But they'll give the wrong answer too, even though, just because everyone else is doing it. I mean,
yeah, and, you know, like, when I was a kid, I remember taking a karate class that, thinking back, it was kind of bunk. You know,
really?
I was spraining my leg, and what they were teaching was pretty silly, just punching and kicking that you could practice on your own. And the way they were practicing it, I hurt myself. And so it was like, obviously they weren't watching close enough, or I was a wild kid. That was true too. But then, like, another point in my life, for a year or two, I took Aikido. And like, Aikido is a really awesome, neat thing to learn about, to study, to read about. But looking back, the way we were practicing it and some of the things I know now, like I said about trapping, it's kind of silly. You know, like, we were throwing each other, like you're saying, everybody's falling down. But was it real?
Yeah.
Not
so much.
Would that
really happen against someone
who
wasn't,
so much,
who wasn't throwing themselves with you?
Yeah, and so we were going kind of doing these dances, which I'm not saying they weren't all. Some of the moves actually are translatable to stuff I'm learning now that I know is more real. And some of the things I learned back then, I am feeling some of those same pathways. But the way we were doing it back then is pretty hokey. Looking back to what I know now. But I mean, how do you get to the real thing? How do you get to, you have to have, number one, you have to have some sort of passion. And so that's why I would say, like, what is it that lights you up that gets you excited enough to actually follow through and do it? Because most people sign up for something and then they peter out and don't keep going. You have to be passionate about it. And why? That's the biggest thing up front. You have to understand, why are you passionate? Why is it important to you? How much does your life mean to you? Is the question I would ask people, you know? What is your worth? What is the rest of your life worth to you? Because if you really think it's super valuable and worthy to you, then you should have some plans on how you're going to protect it. Because the government is not going to protect you, you know? No. The police are not necessarily going to protect you. They might, or they might do the opposite. It depends on what, you know, how much order followers they are and where the orders are coming from and how times have changed. So, you know, the only one ultimately that can protect you and your family is yourself. And so if you don't have a plan, if you're not working on that, then how much do you really care about your own worth? You know,
That's true.
It's hard. I mean, a few years ago, I wouldn't have been able to answer that question with confidence and be like, yeah, I'm working on that, you know? But it was something I did care about, and it started to manifest little by little in my life, and one thing led to another, and I found a really cool way to practice that's effective, that I feel good about, you know? And I think if someone really cares and they have some passion about, you know, they really care about their future and they really have something important to do in this lifetime, they're going to find a way, try a few things until they find the right one and be discerning, you know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's never too late to start either. So we kind of first met after the Funnel 3 conference. You were in the chat a little bit, and that was a big, you know, turning point for me, I'd say, because I was just really inspired. And, you know, before that, all I had was just a Facebook group, and I've been wanting to start doing videos for a long time, but I was just inspired to just start, you know, even though I didn't feel like I was ready, but just at least start after that. So, you know, that was really cool.
That's good to hear.
So, and you were one of the organizers for that too, weren't you?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, folks, you could still check out freedomundernaturallaw.com and all the old, there's links on there to everything that we did there.
Definitely. I had to go back and watch all those presentations again, because there was just so much good information there. So my question is there going to be a Funnel 4?
Yeah, I sure hope so. We've talked a lot about it this year, but all of our organizing team, each of us as individuals have faced, you know, personal challenges that have made us feel like we haven't had that extra time and energy to really go for it. So we're looking at 2025 right now, but I don't think any of us feels anywhere near giving up on the Freedom Under Natural Law project. We're really excited about it and looking forward to keep going. So yeah, if there's other people like yourself that are interested, you know, reach out to me or Will or Leslie, and you know, like we're gonna need some help, because right now it's just our lives are too busy, but we definitely want to get back and do Funnel 4. That's going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I totally know how that is, man. We all have so much on our plates, you know, and I'd be glad to help in some capacity if I could. So,
right on.
As far as your podcast, do you have any exciting plans for the near future, upcoming shows or anything that you want to share?
Well, there's some things in the work that haven't quite solidified, but yeah, I'm looking forward to getting together with some of the really knowledgeable people that you saw in the Funnel conference and try to get some of the familiar faces talking about aspects of symbology to kind of finish out this series. And so I'm excited about those interviews and kind of got my new presentation format I'm really liking. And so trying to find ways to keep it engaging and entertaining. The biggest thing I would want to say to anyone is, like, I really want the End Evil podcast to be something that the listeners get involved with, and I'm always looking for ways to do that. So I'm looking for contributions. People have something they want to share on the show. If it's in line with what we're doing, you know, I'd like to check it out. So I've been trying to ask people, check out Chris, chrisjansen.com. And there's an email list on the endevil.life page. I'm trying to encourage people to get on the email list so we can kind of get this conversation going. Sometimes I make little like videos of what I'm talking about during the week and might put that out on the email list. And then we have a Telegram group. And, you know, we also work in conjunction with the One Great Work Warriors and those six guys. So there's a lot of like collaboration possibilities. And I really want it to be our process of ending evil. You know, it's something we all need to work on together. You know, our greatest weapon is teamwork. So, you know, reach out. You can send me an email at chris@chrisjansen.com. Check out endevil.life and sign up to the email list.
All right. Awesome.
Oh, yeah. And roundtables. You know, there's going to be future live roundtables. I try to do those ever so often. So keep your eye out. Jump on.
Definitely. Okay.
I'd love to have you back, Tony.
Yeah, definitely, man. Anytime. I think I actually went through all the questions I had and thought of some others, and I'm kind of like drawing a blank now.
That's pretty good timing. I'm getting pretty close to having to roll on here anyway. I'd get some dinner in the whole bit, but
well, this has been an awesome conversation, man, and we should definitely do it again. And
oh, heck yeah.
And well, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this and kind of help educate people on these subjects, which are definitely subjects that everybody could benefit from delving into and making part of their regular study, really. So
I appreciate, Tony, you having me on and doing what you're doing, setting the example. You know, just get out there, make videos, and talk about what you can and encourage people in the right direction. Appreciate it.
Man. Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much, sir. And I say, sir, that's not a good...
I do.
But you know what I mean, man? Like, yeah, thank you very much. And you have a good rest of the day.
Fantastic.
All right. Take care. Thank you.